Hey y'all, and welcome to Crooked Hospitality, a show all about the crime, legends, and lore throughout Mississippi's history. I'm your host, Mae Smith, and today's case takes place in Forest, Mississippi. It's a city with a population around 5,500, and it's the county seat of Scott County. On September 27, 1830, the land that includes Scott County was granted to the state of Mississippi and the U.S. in the Treaty of Dancing Rabbit Creek. The treaty included six counties, all are located in the central part of the state. Then, in 1833, Scott County was formed and named after Governor Abram M. Scott, who served two terms as lieutenant governor. Scott County is a part of the Jackson Prairie Belt, and it consists of mostly upland prairie soil. Farming was the primary occupation of the early settlers in this area, and their crops consisted mostly of cotton. This area, known as Scott County, was never heavily populated with Native Americans, but there were a few Indian towns throughout the county. These Native Americans made friends with the new settlers, and an Indian chief, known as Big Fat Sam, actually acted as an interpreter. The tribe even provided the local hotel with fresh meat from the animals in the area. The city of Forest became the county seat of Scott County in 1866, and Donald Triplett, the first person to ever be diagnosed with autism, is from Forest. Eventually, Forest grew into a modern city with several restaurants and lots of things to do. It's in Forest on the afternoon of February 4th, 1986, when a 17-year-old girl named Chandra May arrived home after school. She was a senior at a nearby private school called Leak Academy and was excited to graduate in just a few short months. After she got home, she did her homework and ate dinner with her mother, Janelle. Shortly after dinner, she got ready to head to work. She worked part-time at the McDonald's located in Forest, which was about 12 miles away from her home. Her commute was usually about 20 minutes, so Chandra left home around 5:30 and arrived at McDonald's about 10 minutes before her 6 p.m. shift. The business was slow that Tuesday night, so the manager began to send some employees home early. Chandra was one of those employees, and she clocked out at 7:24 p.m., about an hour and a half after her shift started. She hung around the restaurant a little while to see if it would pick up, but when it was clear it would remain slow, she called her mother, like she always did, to tell her she was about to drive home. And at 7:40, she left McDonald's. After some time had passed, Janelle, who was Chandra's mother, began to worry since Chandra should have made it home by then. When Richard May, Janelle's husband and Chandra's father, called the house at 8:20, Janelle shared her worries with him. Richard, who was out of town for work as a riverboat captain, told his wife to go next door to his brother's house and ask him to drive Chandra's route. He assumed she may have broken down. As Janelle opened her front door to go next door, she spotted something about 100 yards away. It was Chandra's car, pulled onto the side of the road. Immediately, she grabbed her brother-in-law and they ran to see what was going on. When they got there, there was no sign of Chandra, just signs that she had obviously been there. For example, her purse and other belongings were there on the passenger seat, along with a receipt for a Valentine's Day card from the local TGY variety store. Oddly, there was no sign of the card. Later, it was determined that Chandra's ID was missing from her purse. The family immediately notified Scott County law enforcement that Chandra was missing. However, like many cases of missing teenagers, despite the circumstances, law enforcement wouldn't get involved until at least 48 hours had passed. Despite this, the family quickly jumped into action and spread the word around town that Chandra was missing. They hung up posters and handed out flyers. So, there were many people who were aware of her disappearance and who were looking for her. After investigators finally got involved, they spoke to witnesses who said that Chandra visited the local TGY store on February 4th, the night she went missing. They said that she came into the store and purchased an oversized Valentine's Day card, and they assumed it was for her boyfriend, who was 19-year-old Tony Adams, who lived about 30 miles away in Edinburgh, Mississippi. By the time investigators began their work on Chandra's case, the family had already moved Chandra's car. They searched where it was located, but there was no visible evidence to be found. Her car was never forensically processed, so it was never dusted for fingerprints or anything. Eventually, the Mississippi Bureau of Investigation, or the MBI, and the FBI came to assist in the investigation. As the days passed by, rumors and false leads made their way into investigators and led to dead ends. As it got closer to the month of March, the hope of finding Chandra alive dwindled. But for 22 days, her family held on to hope of finding her. I said 22 days because 22 days after she disappeared on February 26, 1986, on what was to be Chandra's 18th birthday, a call came in to police. An off-duty fireman was out hunting that day near the town of Bolton, Mississippi, deep into the woods. As he approached Baker Creek, he noticed something floating on the water. He immediately notified authorities, who quickly arrived at the scene and confirmed that what they were looking at was, in fact, a body. After they removed the body from the water, they made their initial observations. It was female, she was wrapped in large plastic garbage bags, and they estimated that where she was found was about 80 miles from where she disappeared. I don't know what investigators were at the scene, whether they were local, NBI, or FBI. However, what is clear is that no steps were taken to collect evidence in or around the area she was found. Some evidence was either contaminated or potentially lost at the scene, and no one knows if DNA was even ever collected. After a positive ID was made and it was confirmed that the body was in fact that of Chandra, an autopsy was performed. The medical examiner found that she had been bound and gagged with packaging tape, specifically the type commonly used for chicken farming and processing facilities, which they were common in the area. Her first autopsy didn't reveal anything groundbreaking, but a second autopsy by a different source was ordered, and a little bit more information came from it. It was found that strangulation was her cause of death, and there were indications that she had, in fact, been sexually assaulted. However, estimating her time of death proved to be quite difficult due to the amount of time her body was in the cold waters of the creek. The medical examiner's estimate was that she was alive for approximately 17 to 19 days after her abduction, and she'd probably been in the water for 3 to 5 days after her death. There was some speculation as to whether she had been exposed to any type of refrigeration. If so, the time she was believed to be alive may be shorter than originally estimated. In the weeks that followed the discovery of her body, many leads as to her killer came and went, including both her father and her boyfriend. Eventually, they were both cleared of any suspicion. One theory around that time was there was a man known in that area to pose as a police officer, and a lot of people thought he was the killer. However, no evidence came forth to prove that theory. Investigators were leaning hard on the idea that it may have been someone posing as a police officer or someone in authority due to the fact that her car was parked like she was pulled over, her purse was out and open, and her ID was missing. Many local law enforcement officers were pulled for polygraph testing. My only thoughts on their evidence for this theory is that she was so close to home. Why wouldn't she pull over in her driveway? I don't know, when you're being pulled over, you get so anxious, so I could also see why she would have pulled over immediately instead of continuing on to her house. Another suspect was a man named Richard Weeks. In August of 1992, he was in a Missouri jail when he was brought to Hinds County, Mississippi for questioning in Chandra's case. Mississippi investigators knew that he had spent time in Scott and Bolivar County jails back in 1987 and 1988 on forgery charges. Investigators had hoped this would be a much-needed break in the case, but no new evidence or information was gained in his questioning that pertained to Chandra's case. In February 1993, a man named Kenneth McLean was charged for the murder of an Ellisville, Mississippi resident, Lori Hill. Lori was just 18 years old at the time of her murder, similar to Chandra. Kenneth was said to have pulled Lori over while impersonating a police officer before strangling her and dumping her body, which was later discovered. However, these murder charges were eventually dropped due to a lack of evidence. While it seems there are similarities between Lori and Chandra's murders, there was never actually any concrete evidence to link them to Kenneth. Reporters from the Clarion Ledger attempted to question Kenneth, but when Chandra was mentioned, he shut down the interview and cited his Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights. He remains a suspect of high interest, but until new evidence emerges, no charges can be filed. There were two other murder cases with similarities to Chandra's case that also occurred in central Mississippi. In 2001, a man named Mousie Box was murdered in the Forkville area, and his remains were found about 30 miles away in Rankin County. The other murder was that of Sydney Jones in 2005. There isn't much information that I could find about her case, but her remains were found in Morton, Mississippi, located between the city of Forest and Jackson in Scott County. Like I said, information is limited on these cases on the internet, but authorities may feel like there are similarities to Chandra's case. They may know more than what I can find. Across the residents of this area are different opinions on what may have happened to young Chandra that fateful night. Some say they heard it was a cop or a cop's son who had feelings for her that weren't reciprocated. Many bring up the fact that it had to have been a local person due to them having to have knowledge of the woods surrounding that creek where she was found. But overall, everyone shares the same heartfelt opinion of Chandra, that she was a sweet young woman who touched many lives in her short time here on earth. Chandra was a well-rounded, beautiful, nearly 18-year-old girl from a Christian family. She was always smiling, and her death had a profound impact on her classmates and the community she lived in. It is a tragedy that her life was taken so soon by the hands of a monster who has yet to face justice. I pray that one day there will be enough evidence or even a confession to put this monster away. Someone out there knows something. So if it's you who may have a memory from that night or know who's involved, please contact the NBI. And with that, this is the end of the episode. So I just want to say thanks for listening to another episode of Crooked Hospitality. Y'all stay safe out there.